The spill response plans by BP and ExxonMobil, on file at the time of the Deepwater Horizon blowout, were almost identical, except for one feature. ExxonMobil's plan contained a 40-page Appendix K, entitled Media. The Media Management Appendix was more than four times longer than the plan for oil remover, and eight times longer than the plan for resource protection. The appendix provided a snapshot of ExxonMobil's uniform systems of public information management. It instructed ExxonMobil public affairs officers that information requested by a reporter during an oil spill emergency should be sorted into four categories. The document provided examples of types of information in each category. With Category A information, for example, it was permissible to say, at any time, on any occasion, ExxonMobil said today no details were yet available. In Category D, the most sensitive, the example listed in the Interior Response Plan was global warming. The document instructed, all response statements and media releases from Category D are to be issued from headquarters. If a reporter asked a question on this subject, the correct response listed was, we will have someone from our corporate headquarters contact you to discuss any impact on global warming. The appendix also provided employees and contractors with 13 draft press releases that might be used. These included a holding statement, a statement for facility fire/explosion, a product spill reported, a product spill actual, an employee fatality, and a public fatality/serious injury. In the latter case, the canned statement read, we are greatly saddened by this tragic event and express our deepest sympathy to the families of those affected. We are working with appropriate authorities at the site to investigate the cause of the incident. If criminal charges were even a remote possibility, the correct statement would be, preemptively, we believe that there are no grounds for such charges. This was clearly an accident, and we are working to respond to the immediate needs of the incident. Flying over Prince William Sound 23 years earlier, as the Valdezis oil spread into dark shapes, BP's Lord Brown had reflected about how the oil industry would now be measured by its weakest member, the one with the worst reputation, that is, Exxon. After long years of subterranean resentment and competition between the two companies, the tables had turned. Brown was no longer around to face criticism. He had resigned as BP's chief executive on May 1, 2007, after admitting that he had made false statements in a British court document about the origins of his relationship with a Canadian man, Jeff Chevalier, with whom he had been romantically involved. The pair had been dining and social companions, court records showed, of Prime Minister Tony Blair, Peter Mandelson, Blair's controversial advisor, and other former luminaries of New Labour in Britain. Lord Brown's resignation from BP had seemed, in 2007, only a distasteful coda to the end of credulity about the Blair era. By 2011, it was plain that BP's corporate culture, more focused on hubristic global strategy than on day-to-day execution, had helped to set conditions for the Deepwater Horizon accident. When Brown took charge of BP in 1995, he inherited a bloated, government-influenced corporation in deep trouble. Collapsing oil prices threatened BP's viability. Brown had responded much as Lee Raymond and Lawrence Rawl had done when confronting oil price declines in the 1980s, during the years leading up to the Valdez. He slashed costs ruthlessly and reorganized departments aggressively. After timely acquisitions of Amoco and Atlantic Richfield, he cut the corporation's combined costs by one-fifth. For us, it was clear that it, scale through merger, could permanently change the cost structure of the company. It opens up opportunities to do new things because they're cheaper. His financial engineering turned the corporation's profitability around and vaulted BP to the top of the global oil tables, positioning the company to compete anywhere. Brown also oversaw a successful push into the Gulf of Mexico. In 1999, with Exxon as a minority partner, BP discovered a billion-barrel offshore Gulf field called Thunder Horse, which would pump, after costly delays, 250,000 barrels of oil a day by 2009, or almost 5% of all American production. BP became the largest holder of deepwater leases in the Gulf and had exploration success in American waters where ExxonMobil had struggled. At a prospect called Tiber in the Gulf, BP found a field it estimated to contain about 5 billion barrels of oil. Cost-cutting and management redesign undermined BP's safety culture, however. "We have never seen a site where the notion, 'I could die today,' was so real," Telos, a consulting firm that inspected BP's Texas City, Texas refinery, reported in 2005. 2 months later, 15 workers perished in an explosion there. Brown vowed reform, but neither he nor his successor, Tony Hayward, who styled himself as a work boots and coveralls antidote to Brown's slick globalism, actually delivered. The year after the Texas City disaster, a BP pipeline broke and dumped 200,000 gallons of oil in Alaska. Inspectors fined a BP refinery in Ohio $3 million because it had persisted with dangerous practices that had contributed to the Texas City explosion. The Center for Public Integrity found that between 2007 and 2010, BP refineries in Texas and Ohio were responsible for 97% of the willful, egregious safety violations documented by the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration, the American regulator in charge of workplace safety. Many citations involved BP's failure to live up to previous settlements and commitments. The corporation racked up 760 violations in the willful category. During the same period, ExxonMobil had won. On the morning after the Deepwater Horizon caught fire, if a pollster had telephoned executives or engineers in the American oil industry, described the circumstances of the blowout, and asked which major oil corporation was most likely to have been the platform's operator, an overwhelming majority probably would have blurted out BP. The corporation had partnered over the years with all of its major competitors, and in these projects had earned a reputation for poor operations management in project after project. BP paid $34 million in March 2008 to lease Mississippi Canyon Block 252, about 9 square miles, which it renamed Macondo. Houston project managers dispatched the Deepwater Horizon to drill a single well, confirm the presence of oil, and if the prospect looked promising, cap the well and return later to open production. In such deep water, high pressure at the seabed and temperatures at the bottom of the well that can reach 240 degrees Fahrenheit require extraordinary vigilance. Macondo was troublesome from the start. A drill bit stuck in rock. By mid-April, the project was running 6 weeks behind deadline and more than $58 million over budget. The pressure to finish the well, cap it, and move on intensified. The medley of errors that led to the April 20th blowout can be traced back to a single overarching failure, a failure of management, the National Commission concluded. That management failure encompassed BP and its two largest contractors on the project, Halliburton and Transocean. Supervisors at each company made errors that, if avoided, might have prevented the blowout. During the final critical hours, Transocean's team failed to monitor the well properly. Halliburton provided cement to seal the well that tests later showed was probably unstable, a problem that Halliburton knew about from its own internal testing, but failed to report. BP's project managers, who had ultimate responsibility, made a series of decisions apparently aimed at reducing costs that made failure more likely. Government regulators also lacked the authority, the necessary resources, and the technical expertise to prevent these transgressions, the commission found.